Make sure this season to check out Walter's self-poured beer wall, which includes 24 different items, including Fireside Chat, Vienna Lager, and Green City IPA. Visit waltersdc.com for more information.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Two on, two out, 0-2 the count. Irvin pitches. Swing and a drive, left center field and deep. Way back goes Winker. This one's back. It's got a chance and it's gone. Just to the right of the 377 mark, into the Phillies bullpen. On an 0-2 pitch, a three-run homer for JT Realmuto makes it 4-0 Phillies.
Floro delivers, swing a chopper, hit the mound up the middle, on through into center field, a base hit. Rounding third, and coming home, Estadi will score. Over to third on the play is Castellanos. It's a single up the middle, a run batted in for Marsh's fifth of the year. And the Phillies extend their lead. It's now 5-2.
And welcome to Nats Chat for Sunday, April 7, 2024. Along with MadsenSports.com, Nationals insider Mark Zuckerman was at Nationals Park. I'm Al Galdi, host of the Al Galdi podcast. So Saturday was Final Four Saturday in college basketball, but that number four on Saturday also turned out to be appropriate for the Nats because they, on Saturday, totaled just four hits. This is a day after totaling just two hits. Friday evening, a 4-0 loss to the Philadelphia Phillies at Nationals Park. Saturday, a 5-2 loss to the Phillies at Nationals Park, dropping the Nats to just 2-6 in this regular season. However, before we get to the game, as we are recording this installment of the Nats Chat podcast on Saturday evening, major breaking Nats news, the Steven Strasburg saga is over. MLB's official transactions are showing Strasburg is having retired on Saturday, so this is a done deal. And as was reported by Mark on Saturday evening, the Nats and Strasburg have agreed on a financial settlement with his contract in this, the fifth season of the 70-year, $245 million contract to which he was re-signed in December 2019. So we soon will be having a five-year anniversary celebration of the 2019 World Series Championship Nats. That celebration will be happening during the Nats series against the Houston Astros at Nationals Park, April 19th through the 21st. And we now can say that that celebration will be happening with the contractual drama with the MVP of that World Series now over. It is said that deadlines make deals. Mark, there are so many different angles to this, but do you think that that championship celebration weekend served as a deadline of sorts in this situation?
I do. I think unofficially it did. And as we talked about in spring training when this was going on, and we thought, oh, well, there was this deadline for players to report to camp and would he maybe make it there? And he didn't. And I felt like all along, as looking ahead to this, how do you hold a celebration of the World Series team and not have him in attendance? Because I don't think he could have or would have come if this was unresolved still. There were too many questions out there and the relationship was such that I just didn't see him agreeing to participate in it. So I do think this was some motivation, probably more so on the national side of the equation to say, okay, look, we want to have a really nice celebration. We want to celebrate you. How can we get this thing done? What can we do? I don't know the exact financial terms of this yet. but my understanding is that both sides are amenable to it. And I do believe that there is at least some deferring of the money that's still owed him over the next 3 years, which I think is mostly what the Nats were looking for all along. I don't think they were looking for money back. I think they understood that it's a guaranteed contract. And in baseball, you're not just going to get him to agree to give any money back. So, you know, I'm sure we'll find out here in the coming days more specifics about it. But whatever the agreement was, it was something that both sides did finally say, yes, this works for us. Let's move on and let's now actually celebrate the man, because he certainly deserves to be celebrated.
In your conversations with people, would you say that the Strasburg Nats relationship has been significantly damaged or not really?
I think it was through this process. That was my understanding, that he was not going to be in any mood to help them out in any way if they needed stuff, such as coming to spring training and mentoring young guys, making any kind of public appearances, or coming to a World Series celebration. Now, does this completely, you know, wash that away and say, hey, everybody's happy? I don't know. My guess is there's probably still going to be some lingering feelings on both sides of the equation that aren't great. But as I said all along, whatever that disagreement was and whoever it was among, it was at an ownership level, not at a GM and down level. And even at the ownership level, it's not with the entire ownership group. I was always under the impression that we're talking about a portion of the owners of the Lerner family. I can't get into details of who that is specifically, but I don't think there's any reason to think that Steven Strasburg and Mike Rizzo have any issues, or Steven Strasburg and Davey Martinez, or anybody from that level down in the baseball department. This was really strictly at an ownership level. And we'll have to see how that goes now moving forward. Is this going to be somebody we see around from time to time? I don't know. He's not the most public figure to begin with, so I don't think this is going to be like Ryan Zimmerman showing up all over the place. But at the very least, they are able to shake hands on this and, you know, move on with the future of the franchise. And in Steven's case, just move on with his life at last.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about this upcoming 5-year anniversary celebration of the 2019 World Series team. And I think it's, you know, a perfectly fine thing to do. I mean, you know, you have this situation where the Astros are coming to Nationals Park. It has been 5 years since that World Series title. Like, you should do something to commemorate this. But I think there's something to be said for when that weekend is over, I think it might be healthy to kind of put 2019 away for a while and just kind of let it be. There has been a lot of referring to it over these last few years. There has been a lot of hearkening back to it over these last few years. We have seen Mike Rizzo bring back a number of the players from that team. And I'm not saying that that World Series championship season should not be honored and commemorated and forever remembered so fondly, certainly by Nationals fans. But I know that there is a sizable portion of the Nats fan base, maybe even a majority portion, that kind of feels like the team has been clinging to this a bit much. And I think now that the Strasburg thing is taken care of, you're going to have this 5-year anniversary celebration later this month. Great. Have a great time. Have a great weekend. Hopefully Strasburg speaks to you guys. Hopefully gets a great ovation at Nationals Park. But my 2 cents, I think after that weekend, we should put 2019 away for a while and really focus on the here and now, because I think that that is what matters the most right now.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think that the first year, obviously, you make a big deal of it. And then because the first year was the COVID year, you kind of owe it to everyone to continue it maybe the year after that in 21. And then the combination of just time having passed, players being gone, and the team completely starting over on the field, to me, made it a little awkward when this would come up in 2022 and 2023. It's like, okay, I get it. It's still relatively recent history. And yes, you did a wonderful thing, but you have clearly moved on as a baseball team from that point. It may not be appropriate anymore to sell your identity as a franchise on a World Series title that feels very distant at this point because of what's happened on the field. So, you know, it's funny. I haven't looked at, like, do other teams do 5-year celebrations, or do they wait for the 10th anniversary? I don't know. I haven't covered a World Series winner before, so it's not something I've paid a lot of attention to. It feels a little soon, and it is 5 years, but, like, really, that wouldn't be till October of this year. I think it has to do with the Astros coming to town when they are, is the reason for it. But yeah, I think once you get past this, outside of the occasional, you know, hey, Anthony Rendon comes back to town with the Angels, you give him his ovation, you play a video for him and all that. But beyond that, I do think it is absolutely time to move on from that. And hopefully, this is a franchise that will start winning soon enough that you can focus on current success and not have to live on past success.
Yeah, I think there's a symbolism to Strasburg's situation finally over this season, the final season of the Patrick Corbin contract. Like, I think there really is a moving on. I think this season is kind of like the cutoff season of, okay, we're done with this. Now we move into hopefully the next phase of great Nationals baseball and great Nationals achievement. So I'm happy the Strasburg thing is over. You know, we've talked so much about it. You had no idea when it might be over. I think we anticipated this day would come, when it would come, how it would come, who the heck knew. It got so awkward and so bizarre. I mean, we talked about the Mike Rizzo deadline that ended up not being a deadline at all. It was an empty thread. You know, there is, of course, what happened with Strasburg, where it's not just that after the World Series, he was never the same again. Like, he basically didn't do anything good for the franchise after that. Like, you know, sometimes a decline takes a year or two. This was like immediate. It really is something what happened. The contract, of course, goes down as maybe the worst in major North American pro sports history. I mean, I know that that may sound like hyperbole. I don't think that it is. I think it is certainly in the conversation. So it's a very unfortunate situation. I do think his legacy is largely positive. I think most people will always remember his major league debut and what he did in 2019 and so many of the good things in between there. But yeah, this was a really unfortunate ending to his time with the team. I don't know how you frame it any other way.
No, of course. And I mean, when you think about, as much as people at the time, you worry about a contract like that on a pitcher and say, oh boy, how's that going to work out in the end? I don't think anybody, even in your nightmare scenario, envisioned only 8 more starts for him after signing a 7-year extension. I agreed. I would have thought, okay, he'd probably still be pretty good for a few more years. Maybe he has some injuries along the way. And then inevitably that decline comes and he may not make it to the end of the contract, but he's still going to do something productive for them. And remember, this is a team that at the time was still trying to win and thought it could still win for at least a few more years. And not that he alone is the reason that the franchise tore it down and started over, but his situation is very high on the list of reasons. And the timing of it, let's remember, July of 2021, right as everything is falling apart on the field and you're approaching a trade deadline. And I remember at the time thinking to myself, okay, once it's clear you're not going to win this year, you're going to trade the guys on expiring contracts, Max Scherzer being first and foremost there. But that same week, I think, it was revealed that Strasburg was going to need thoracic outlet surgery. And to me, that said, okay, they're not just not ready to win this year. They're not going to be ready to win next year either. And that's why they trade Trey Turner. And I know all this has weighed on Steven himself, that he has felt personally responsible in a lot of ways for what's happened to the organization. And I hope he's able to get over or has been able to get over those feelings, because it's not fair to put it on him. As we've detailed over and over, all the other reasons that led to them tearing it down and being where they are now. And yes, Strasburg's injury is part of the equation, but it's far from the only one. And even if he had been healthy through all this, this is not a team that was going to be able to win consistently over the last several years. So to me, it's crazy to think 9 starts ago for Steven Strasburg was Game 6 of the World Series. He only made 8 starts after that and his career is over. And that's a wild and sad thing to consider, that he actually was great and dominant almost at the end of his career, as it turned out. We just had no way of knowing that at the time.
For sure. And like, I think multiple things can be true. It's true that in hindsight, giving him that contract was a major mistake and the red flag should have been adhered to, right? A guy with a major injury history. Yes, he was coming off a durable 2019 season, in addition, of course, to a very successful 2019 season. But when you have a guy like that, major injury history, that 2019 season was his age 30 season, and you're giving him 7 years, $245 million, like in hindsight, that just seems nuts. So that can be true. It can also be true that the contract did not have to go this poorly. Like, I mean, this is what you call an overly punitive turnout from that contract. It did not have to go this bad. And of course, it ended up going that bad, and it's unfortunate. But at least the saga is over. I'm thankful that we don't have to talk about it all that much anymore. I think we both have had our fill of the Strasburg conversation. And again, I do hope something nice happens April 19th through the 21st. Who knows what he'll be amenable to, but it would be nice if there could be like one last final true goodbye to Strasburg. Kind of like that last game for Ryan Zimmerman in October 21. He got a goodbye. Nats fans got to truly say their goodbye, even though it's not like he's gone. I mean, he's still around a bunch. But this, to me, can be a formal, proper goodbye to one of the best starting pitchers in the history of the franchise.
my guess is, and I don't know any details yet, but my guess is that they're going to want to focus that weekend on the team as a whole. And obviously he'll be a big part of it. But I would imagine whether it's later this year, next year, I don't know when it would be, that they will have a Steven Strasburg day, quote unquote. I think they will retire his number. I don't know how you wouldn't, given his importance to the organization, as long as he's, you know, amenable to that. And I don't know why he wouldn't be. So we may not be totally done with celebrating Steven Strasburg. Again, knowing him, I think they want to make sure that that weekend coming up, which it's the next homestand, actually, because they're about to go on this long West Coast trip, that that's going to be about the 2019 team. And then eventually you do have a day to just honor Steven Strasburg.
Tim Shover is here to tell you about Game Time. On Tuesday, April 8th, Bad Bunny is coming to Capital One Arena. Now, personally, I did not think he did a particularly good job as an SNL host earlier this season, but I'm confident sketch comedy will not be the focal point of this concert. One great thing about Game Time is their priority, last-minute deals. Save up to 60% off buying last-minute for sports, concerts, comedy, and theater. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code NATSCHAT for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code NATSCHAT for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The batter, Joey Gallo, the first pitch. Gallo drives one in the air to right center field and deep. Back on this one, Rojas. Way back it goes. Number 200 in the career of Joey Gallo. Six rows deep over the out-of-town scoreboard in right center. The Nationals on the board, trail it 4-2. Gallo's second homer as a National, a personal milestone. Get him that baseball for career home run number 200. In the career of Joey Gallo.
Well, the Nats did have a game on Saturday, and the game happened before we knew anything about this Steven Strasburg stuff. And the game happened with the Nats being without their best player so far this season, CJ Abrams. He was a late scratch, but the Nats did not hit for a second time in as many games in this three-game series against the Phillies at Nationals Park. The Nats over two games in this series have totaled just two runs and just six hits. Two runs, six hits. Those would be bad totals for a singular game. Those are the Nats totals for two games in this series and against what profiles as a good hitting team in the Phillies. So in this 5-2 loss on Saturday, we did see Joey Gallo hit another home run. That was nice. We did perhaps have Lane Thomas bust out of his slump. That was nice. But Mark, offensively, these have been two really rough games for the Nats.
I don't even know what to fully attribute it to. I mean, they were without CJ Abrams on Saturday. He's got a bone bruise in his pinky finger. Hopefully it's nothing terribly serious. You know, obviously losing him hurts, but there are plenty of other guys in this lineup who, you know, have the ability to do a little bit of damage. And I mean, they didn't have a hit after the third inning. Joey Gallo's homer and then nothing the rest of the way. And look, we talked about this the other day, and it came, I think, right to the forefront again. A lot of quick outs, swinging at the first pitch, making weak contact at the first pitch. They drew a couple walks late in the game, but I mean, this is just not a way to go about this. You're letting their opposing starting pitchers get to the fifth, sixth inning with really low pitch counts. And I know we talked the other day about, hey, sometimes swinging at the first pitch might be the best one you're going to get. That's fine. but they're not getting good ones to hit. And if they are, they're not making good contact on it. And I think that's something that's going to have to change here. They've got to have a better approach to try to sustain some rallies and at least knock a starting pitcher out of the game and get to the bullpen a little earlier.
We talked on the last installment of the show about the struggles of Lane Thomas. Like I said, he had a good game on Saturday. We'll get to that. But there are other regular Nats who are not performing right now. Joey Meneses on Saturday, 0-for-4, two strikeouts. He's so far this regular season, 257 on base, 226 slugging. K-Bert Ruiz on Saturday, 0-for-4 with a strikeout. He's so far this regular season, 241 on base, 321 slugging. But Lane Thomas did hit, and hopefully this gets him going here. I mean, the Nats need this guy to be good. He's your every game right fielder, at least as things stand right now. Thomas on Saturday ended up as the Nats' number one batter. And you know, it's interesting. You go back to last season, prior to CJ Abrams becoming the leadoff batter, the best work from Lane Thomas did come in that number one spot. You wouldn't think the spot in the lineup would make that much of a difference, but coincidence or not, Lane Thomas on Saturday as that starting right fielder and number one batter hit 2-for-3 with two singles and a walk, 1-for-1 on stolen bases. Bottom of the first, a leadoff full count, opposite field single through the right side of the infield despite having been down at 1.12. Thomas in that Nats two-run third, a one-out single to center field and to steal a second base. And Thomas in the bottom of the eighth, a one-out walk. Look, not, you know, an all-world performance or anything like that, but a lot better than what we had been seeing. And Lane Thomas, we saw 2023 Lane Thomas on display, at least to a certain extent, on Saturday.
It was nice to see that. I had the same thought about you being in the leadoff spot. Maybe there's just something about that that's comfortable to him, and we'll see how it goes from here. But good quality at bats. It's a shame he made a bad play in the field, because otherwise this would have been a very good game for him. He tried to track down a ball sinking liner into right field and got caught kind of in no man's land. Didn't really dive after it, didn't pull up. The ball got past him for an RBI triple. But at the plate, I thought that was an important game for him. You hope this is something that finally gets him going. And if you do have Abrams back in the next day or two, he and Thomas can set the table and set the tone for the rest of the lineup. And then they need to get Joey Meneses going, because he is really struggling right now. And unlike Lane, who I think has had some loud contact and just hit into some bad luck, it doesn't feel like the same with Joey Meneses. It feels like there's some bad at-bats. He struck out twice in this game, and in his last one in the eighth inning, he swung out of his shoelaces a couple times at pitches and did not look at all in control at the plate.
Well, the Nats' other Joey is doing quite well. Joey Gallo on Saturday as the Nats' starting first baseman and number three batter, 1-for-4 with a two-run homer. Gallo in that two-run third, a two-out first pitch, two-run homer to right center field to cut the Nats' deficit to 4-2, 415 feet per Statcast, home run number 200 in the regular season major league career of Joey Gallo. He's a fun guy to watch. We know he's a three true outcome guy, but his homers aren't just, you know, wall scrapers. Like, this guy can hit some bombs, and that was a bomb from Joey Gallo, and he's gotten going here. He had the bad exhibition season, a bad initial start to the regular season, but on this homestand, Gallo has really started to do well.
He hit that first homer, and it's like everybody could take a sigh of relief. He could relax. He's also hit doubles, singles. He's drawing walks. He obviously hit the other home run. He continues to play really good defense at first base. And so you hope this is the start of something and not just a little blip here of a few good days for him, because they need it from him, obviously. I thought this homer was actually going to have a domino effect on the rest of the lineup. They're down 4-0 early. You're thinking, oh boy, here we go again. And he immediately comes right back with that one to cut it to 4-2. And I thought, okay, here you go. And instead, as I said, that was the last hit they had in the game. And that was the third inning. So that was really unfortunate. It was a big deal for him. This was his 200th career homer. And I was a little surprised by that. He really thought it was a big deal and said, like, look, you don't even know as a kid if you're ever going to make the major leagues, let alone to hit 200 home runs. And he thinks that's a really cool accomplishment. And far be it for me to say, no, it's not. But I feel like this is a guy who should have a lot of career left and it should make a good run at 300, the career trajectory that he's on. I would hope he someday gets the chance to do that. 200 feels like a low total for someone of his stature.
So you mentioned CJ Abrams, late scratch due to that left pinky bone bruise that he suffered on a slide into second base in the loss to the Phillies on Friday evening. However, another Nat dealing with an injured finger, Nick Senzel, apparently is going to be back sooner rather than later. And this is at least somewhat surprising. I mean, I guess we never really had like a firm timetable, but Senzel fractured right thumb, that he suffered, remember, while fielding a grounder prior to the Nats game on opening day on March 28th. He's been on the 10-day injured list retroactively since March 27th, and he's going to be playing in a rehab game. And, you know, I was thinking about this because we talked on the last installment of the podcast about Trey Lipscomb prior to Friday's game taking some outfield work. Maybe the return of Senzel helps to explain that, that if you want to get Senzel at bats, Luis Garcia Jr. has been doing well. Maybe they find some playing time for Lipscomb in the outfield. But good for Senzel, apparently on the verge of being back here soon.
Yeah, I was really surprised to hear that. You hear fractured finger, and I feel like over the years I've heard of enough of those injuries that you're thinking, okay, it's like 4 to 6 weeks we're talking about. No, it's going to be like 11 days after he suffered the injury, he's going to be playing in a game. He's already taken BP. He's already been able to throw with no issues. It does sound like it was a fairly minor fracture right on the tip of the thumb. It has not stopped him from gripping a bat. So, I mean, that's all great news that he can do that. It seems like it may just be a pain tolerance issue. It's not like there's a fear of anything worse happening if he tries to play through it. But now with Lipscomb, I don't know. I'll be interested to see how this plays out. You want to give Senzel at least a few days, maybe even a week on rehab. There's no reason to rush them back, I wouldn't think. But then what? Because Lipscomb, after that great start, is cooled off quite a bit. I think it's one for his last 11. He was better in the field in this game after having those couple of errors earlier in the week. I do think there could be an interesting push and pull here on the baseball side of the operation. Does it make sense to keep him here and find ways to get him at bats playing multiple positions? Or might they say, hey, you know what? We decided you weren't going to make the opening day roster for a reason. And it was because of an injury that we called you up. And while you've done some good things here, it hasn't exactly been dominant straight through. Maybe the best thing for him is to go back to AAA and play every day and kind of stick with the original plan that it was going to be. I don't know what they're going to do there. I think they have at least a few more days to figure that out, maybe even, you know, a full week before they have to figure that out. And let's see how he does the next few days. But initially, when he came up and was so good, I'm thinking, well, he's not going back down. The way the last few days have gone, I thought, yeah, maybe. I could see them making the case for sending him back down and just kind of going back to what the initial plan was.
Yeah, I would just say this. Whatever the initial plan was, there clearly wasn't that firm of a commitment to it, because the second Senzel went down, they bring up Lipscomb, right? So even if they said, yeah, he's better off starting the season in the minors, you clearly weren't that committed to it, because as soon as Senzel was out, remember, it was that evening that the news broke that Lipscomb was being brought up. So yeah, it would be interesting to know, what do they truly think? I mean, is it as simple as Lipscomb was sent down because of Nassim Nunez? Like, is it just because of that? You had a Rule 5 draftee, and that's why you sent the guy down. Otherwise, he would have been on that season opening roster at the major league level.
I think it's partly that, but I think really, you know, take the, say, five most important decision makers when it comes to putting together an opening day roster. I think there was not consensus opinion there. I think there were some who believed that he was ready and wanted to put him on the team, and others who said, hang on a second, I think he could use some more time. So yeah, the nature of who else they had and how they wanted to arrange their infield, I think, is part of it. But I think there was some genuine, at least from some corners of that room, opinion that let's not push this guy before he's truly ready. He had a great spring, yes, but he's never played at AAA. Like, let's give him a chance to get his feet wet there and to play second base mostly, which was what the initial idea was, thinking that, well, eventually he's going to replace Luis Garcia. And then all of a sudden, Senzel gets hurt, Lipscomb takes over at third, and Luis gets off to a really good start to his season. So I'm not sure they know exactly where this is going yet. I would think that Trey's performance the next few days could go a long way now towards determining what the next move is.
Nassim Nunez, by the way, was your national starting shortstop on Saturday, made his major league regular season debut, was the number 9 batter, 0-for-2, got caught in an attempted steal of second base. I also want to note this, another Jesse Winker outfield assist. He threw a laser in the top of the seventh.
The right-hander throws, swinging a fly ball to shallow left. Winker moving in, will make the catch. Stott's coming home. Winker's throw to the plate on one bounce. Ruiz the tag, he's out! Winker guns him down for his second outfield assist of the year.
For a 7-2 double play for the final two outs off Winker making a charging catch of a liner off the bat of Johan Rojas. So Winker in this game, starting left fielder, number 5 batter, 0-for-2 with a walk and a hit by pitch. The walk was an impressive plate appearance. I mean, it ended up not meaning much, but bottom of the ninth, a one-out walk. He also drew a leadoff hit by pitch in the bottom of the seventh. But we saw Lane Thomas last season with all of those outfield assists in right field, and Winker already this season, two really impressive outfield assists in left field.
These were perfect throws, both of them. And this one, I mean, really amazed me. I want to go back and watch it in like super slow-mo again, because it felt like the ball couldn't have been more than a couple inches away from the runner. It was that much on a line right to Keibert Ruiz, and credit to Ruiz also for being in a good position to make the catch and apply the tag without getting called for blocking the plate. But both of these throws he's made, the one in Cincinnati and this one, were absolutely perfect. I think the first one in Cincinnati was 93 miles an hour. This one was 91.4. This is not the Jesse Winker that I thought they were getting. It may not be the Jesse Winker they thought they were getting, but he has slimmed down. Everybody in Cincinnati who used to know him really noticed it when they saw him last weekend. Dropped 25 pounds, in really good shape. And so far, it's early, but he has definitely been everything and maybe more than they thought they were getting when they put him on the team.
Yeah, he has been a tough out as a batter. He's done a good job offensively.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Here's your James Wood update. As Rochester returned to action after four consecutive rainouts, Wood hit second, went 1-for-4 with a double, struck out twice. He's hitting .357 on the young season. Now back to the show.
Here's the set. Pitch swung on, line to right, coming on as Thomas can't get it, and it goes by him all the way to the fence. Realmuto around third will score. Bohm is around second, and he will go into third standing without a play. A sinking liner to Thomas's left toward the line, and in his estimation, he wasn't going to be able to cut it off without diving for it, and he just couldn't get there. So it's a triple for Bohm, his first of the year, and his fifth run batted in, and the Phillies are on the board first. They lead it 1-0.
Well, Jake Irvin was the Nats starting pitcher for this 5-2 loss to the Phillies at Nationals Park on Saturday. Four runs in six innings, gave up five hits, which are comprised of a homer, a triple, a double, and two singles. Did have five strikeouts versus one walk, and the walk was an intentional walk. He threw 93 pitches, 58 strikes versus 35 balls. Top of the second, Irvin gave up a run on a leadoff single by JT Realmuto to left field and an opposite field RBI triple by Alec Bohm to right field for a 1-0 Phillies lead. The single by Realmuto, by the way, came despite him having been down at 1.02. And that theme came up later in the game. Irvin, in the top of the third, allowed three runs, retired the first two batters in the inning, but he then gave up a two-out double by Trey Turner to left field, then issued a two-out intentional walk of Bryce Harper, and then gave up a two-out three-run homer by JT Realmuto to left center on an 0-2 pitch for a 4-0 Phillies lead. So Irvin had five strikeouts in this game, but as we saw with Josiah Gray, opportunities to put guys away, not putting them away. And the results were, at least in these two instances, a key single by Realmuto and then a three-run homer by Realmuto. We're eight games into this Nats regular season. We have yet to have a quality start, as it is defined in terms of what a national starting pitcher has done, right? Three runs in six innings. I mean, I don't think that that's quality. Most people don't, but whatever. That's a quality start. We haven't gotten that yet. We haven't had what you would truly call a good start by a Nats starting pitcher. We're now more than halfway through the rotation for a second time. I don't know how you say it any other way. The Nats starting pitching so far has been a disappointment. I mean, to me, that's the truth.
Yeah, no, it 100% has. And I think the hard part of that is that a couple of these guys, and this certainly applies, were often one or two pitches away from having what I would describe as a really good start. He was really good after that. And facing those hitters we talked about the other day with Corbin, like having to face Schwarber, Turner, Harper, Realmuto a third and fourth time, Irvin did it three times and was better against them the third time around than the second time. I thought pitched extremely well, in spite of the fact that he actually was sick, said he had had an illness the last few days. I guess the same thing that's been plaguing a lot of others in the clubhouse. But that home run pitch to Real Muto, to the whole at bat, okay, he goes back-to-back curveballs to get ahead in the count 0-2. And then he triples up with another curveball, 0-2, and you could not leave it on a platter any more than he did. And he knew it. He acknowledged it. The idea was get it down in the zone, maybe even bounce it and try to get him to chase. But man, oh man, you get ahead. And I get you don't want to, we complain when they get ahead in the count and then start like messing around and nibbling around the edges of the zone. Next thing you know, it's 3-2. But you also can't just leave one right over the heart of the plate like that, which is what he did. And it cost him and the team dearly, all the more so when you intentionally walk the guy right in front of him.
The other thing, too, with the pitching is, look, it has been a bad spring in the Washington, D.C. area. It's cold outside, and normally cooler temperatures lend themselves to pitchers doing better, right? It's when the weather warms up that you usually see the bats warm up. And so you would think that these weather conditions would be helpful to these Nat starters, and we're not seeing that. I mean, these guys are, you know, we've seen some like mediocre starts. It's not like every outing has been wretched. But like I said, we have yet to have anything that you would truly label and honestly label a good start by a Nat starting pitcher.
And especially for Jake Irvin, who grew up where? In Minnesota. He said this was nothing for him. He thinks pitching on a day like this is an advantage for him. And normally it would be, and it didn't prove to be, mostly because of the one really bad pitch. So I kind of shudder to think, if you got the same kind of performances in July when the ball's flying, what the results might have looked like. They've got to be better at this. And not that we went into this saying this is going to be a great rotation, but I think we went into it and said this should be better than it was a year ago, especially if the young guys can continue to get better. And so far, it's only a few games. So far, that has not been, I mean, the best starts so far have actually been by Corbin and Williams, right?
Yeah, which says a lot about a lot. And I don't know that we need to say more. Nats bullpen in this loss to the Phillies on Saturday. Three Nats relievers combined to allow one run in three innings. The bullpen was basically fine. Derek lost scoreless top of the seventh, despite beginning it by giving up back-to-back singles. Robert Garcia, scoreless top of the eighth, with strikeouts of Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto and Dylan Floro in the top of the ninth, allowed a run on two walks and an RBI single. We have yet to see Hunter Harvey in this series. We have yet to see Kyle Finnegan in this series. That, of course, is a function of the circumstances of these games. So, if anything, Finnegan and Harvey should be well rested for Sunday. Hopefully, they are needed on Sunday.
You know, I was even thinking, would they just use him in this game, even down a couple of runs, try to keep it close? And Davey decided not to. I suppose the fact there are no more off days until next Thursday out west maybe, you know, prevented him from doing that. I think Finnegan started warming up briefly just in case they came back to tie the game in the bottom of the eighth. Yeah, they should be fine. It was still no clean innings, though, from them. Everybody had base runners. Robert Garcia looked really good. And I mean, he took down Bryce Harper with three straight fastballs, capped off at 97. That was an 0-2 count that he actually finished, which was very nice to see. So I liked that. The other innings, Floro and Law, a little more traffic on the bases. And I feel like this is happening a lot. Like, where's that nice, clean 10-pitch inning by a reliever? Has not really happened yet. But, you know, they have bigger fish to fry right now. That's not their number one issue.
Well, you tell us what you think. The big Strasburg news, the struggles of the Nats offense. Hit us up on X at Nats_chat. You can email us natschatpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on YouTube. Just search Nats Chat. Our YouTube handle is at Nats Chat Podcast. And we have a website that we invite you to check out, natschatpodcast.com, at which you can buy a Nats Chat Podcast t-shirt. All Nationals radio highlights on Nats Chat are courtesy of 106.7 The Fan. Nats Chat is on the radio Sunday morning 9 to 10 on ESPN Richmond, which is 106.1 FM in the Richmond, Virginia area. And we're on Priority Sports Radio 94.1 in the Virginia Beach area. For Mark Zuckerman, I'm Al Galdi. We thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the Nats Chat Podcast.